Welcome to the 14th episode of the Kiwi Podcast Season 2. In this episode, we have with us Shera Gill, a minimalist, a globally recognized organizing expert, best-selling author, and speaker. In this episode, we speak with her about her journey as an organizing expert and lifestyle creator, her idea of minimalism and what it means for her, the importance of defining our own version of minimalism in life and adding value to it, and so much more. She also speaks about the correlation between decluttering life and decluttering things in our lives, the importance of starting small, and the creative process behind her work. We were so inspired to start somewhere from this conversation, and we hope it inspires you the same way as well. Thank you so much, Shera, for joining us today. I am so excited to have this conversation. We're going to go into a few different concepts that you talk about and kind of understand your journey and where it started. And we're so excited to hear your story. My first question to you is about your journey, where it all began and how you came about being this person of an organizing expert and designer, along with being an author and a lifestyle creator.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be talking with you. So I guess my journey started when I was quite young. My parents divorced when I was about 8 years old. And I had two separate houses. So I had to bring my stuff back and forth as a child, back and forth between the two homes. And I think because of that disruption, I guess, in my life, I always felt very sensitive to my environment. And so I, in a world that felt like it didn't always have control, the things around me, I wanted to control the things that I could. And so I remember as a child always wanting my room to feel really good and kind of balanced and harmonious and organized. And so I always, as a child, craved order and organization. And as I got older, it was something I always helped my friends with. So I would help them clean out their closets or organize their rooms. And it wasn't until my 20s that I had a big career pivot. So I had been an actor for most of my life since I was a child. I had been an actor. I don't even know if you know this. when I became a mom and got married, I realized that being an actor was not sustainable. It was going to be really difficult because I traveled so much as an actor and I was always jumping from job to job. And I wanted something a bit more stable. And I had tried working in the event planning world, but I was laid off and lost my job when I was 8 months pregnant with my daughter. I now have two teenage daughters. And so I just was at this turning point of what do I do? How do I make money? What's my new career? And it was really my closest girlfriends who urged me to start helping people with clutter and organization and styling. And at the time, this was now almost 15 years ago, home organizing really wasn't a profession that anybody had heard of. It was before Marie Kondo and the Home Edit and these companies people now know very well. And so I just put together a website and I told everyone I knew that I could help. And I started booking my first client. So it was very, very organic and not planned at all the way that it started. And it just took off. And I was sort of shocked at how everyone I met was struggling with clutter or disorganization or feeling overwhelmed in their home and overwhelmed in their life. And so I really created my own system and methodology to help people clarify what they cared about most, and then cut the clutter that was in the way, both in their homes and in their lives. So that's kind of the quick story about how it all began and now, as you know, has evolved into books and courses and workshops and speaking and much more.
So you started 15 years ago?
Yes.
And was there any particular story or turning point or part in your life that kind of changed things for you in this journey?
Yeah, I think, really for me, it was becoming a mother and having kids and wanting to create a life and career that felt as balanced as possible. So I wanted to be able to spend time with my young daughters. When I started my business, I had a newborn baby and then I had another baby. So 2 years apart. So I had a baby and a toddler. But I always really wanted to have my own career and be an example to my daughters. And so I think it was really becoming a mom that flipped a switch for me and made me realize I don't just want this to be a hobby or a side hustle. I really want it to be a full-blown career. Mm-hmm. And so I really leaned in. I hired business coaches and strategists, and I hired a professional photographer to shoot my home and my projects. And I think it was really just making that decision of wanting to go from having like a little job with a lowercase j to a big career with a capital C career, and deciding I want to go all in. And so pitching articles and going on podcasts and just really leaning into the profession and seeing how could I help as many people as possible, not just locally where I live. I'm in San Francisco, California, but all over the world. And we live during such an exciting time where even just talking to you across the world, you know, it's nighttime for me and early morning for you, and we're able to still connect. It's so exciting to me. And I'm a person who loves travel, and I love connecting with other people who have different backgrounds. So it's been quite an exciting career journey.
Yeah. And I can also see how having a child, or having children for that matter, really makes such a large impact on you, especially with organizing and things like that. I've noticed it. I have to have it all together for us all, having a 15-month-old. Like it's not something that you can, you know, continue on in your teenage ways or your 20s or your, you know, early 30s. Like you have to have it together. So I can see how that kind of, you know, push things in that direction for you. I wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of minimalism and what it kind of means from your perspective. So we talk about it a lot from the perspective of commodities and things in our home and lives. Can you tell us a little bit about the idea from a way of thinking and a way of living, and not just, I mean, we'll get to the commodities aspect of it, but minimalism as a way of thinking and being.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the way I think about minimalism is it's not about restriction. It's about creating freedom and saying no to the wrong things so you can create space for more of the right things in your life. I think minimalism is really about being radically intentional, not just with the things that you buy, but anything that you allow into your life, whether that's a job or a relationship, any part of your life. It's about slowing down to question those things and question, are they adding value to my life or are they just creating clutter and distraction? So, you know, in my philosophy, I'll never tell people, here's how many cups or plates you should own or how many handbags you should own. It's not about the number. It's about defining your version of enough. And I've coached thousands of people now through this process, and they've all arrived at their own very unique answers. So I think what's exciting about it is that it's a process that's applicable to anyone in any lifestyle, any location, any budget. It's really about being radically intentional and purposeful with how you spend your time and your energy and your resources.
Yeah. And in today's day and age, or like with social media and generally how we kind of live our lives or how it's structured, is filled with distractions and filled with people pushing things down our throat or people pushing their opinions down our throat. And, you know, it's kind of very noisy. Is there any way? So, and earlier you said that you were particularly sensitive to your environment and that kind of urged you to be more intentional with the way you live your life and the way you live, you set up your surroundings. Not all of us are like that, but it does affect us at some level.
Right.
Do you think that that still plays an impact in the way we live our lives if we're not as sensitive?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've seen, you know, they're both anecdotally in my work and also research-based, there's a huge cost to clutter and disorganization for people, regardless of how sensitive they may be. There's a whole spectrum, obviously, but clutter and disorganization has been linked to anxiety and depression, sleep loss and fatigue, especially for women. It does tend to impact women more so than men. But I've seen in my work an emotional toll of stress and anxiety and overwhelm, a financial strain of overbuying on, you know, consumer goods that we think are going to make us happy or fill some hole in our lives that really just lead us feeling more anxious and more depressed or overwhelmed. I've seen a lot of relationship strain in my work, couples fighting over where are the things and losing things and managing things and debt. So I think, you know, and in addition to that, there's just the mental cost of feeling the overwhelm and the friction of not being able to run through your life smoothly, find the things you need when you need them, you know, get to a meeting when you want to because you can't find the coat that you need or your bag. So I think it does really affect everyone to some extent or another, this concept of having more than we can manage and consuming more than we can keep up with is really, it's become a global crisis and a mental health crisis as well. And I think the way we can start to solve that is simply by consuming less, being more mindful about what we invite into our homes and lives. And I think the great news is we always get to choose and we can always change and shift our behavior if what we're doing now isn't working. We can always audit it and shift it and transition to buying less or consuming differently or being more thoughtful and intentional about what we say yes to.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any stories from maybe your personal experience or some clients that you've worked with where you've seen a drastic change in the way people are thinking and living after making this switch to being more mindful and intentional with the way about their environments and the way that they choose to live their lives?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, I have dozens of stories, a few that stand out. I mean, what's one thing that's been really interesting to me is there's been a correlation with decluttering your home and life and also becoming healthier in your body. And so I've had many clients who have reported that after decluttering their homes and getting organized, they're eating better, they're losing weight, they're working out more, they're making healthier choices. And this really surprised me, but when you think about it, it makes sense because it's being more intentional in one area of your life that then kind of inspires you to be more intentional in other areas. Another thing I've really seen is relationships. So I've had like one specific client was single and wanted to date and wanted to find a partner and get married, but she felt embarrassed to have people over to her home because it was cluttered and disorganized and she wasn't proud of it. And so her goal in working together was, I want to have a home where I feel proud to invite people over. And so we edited and organized and styled her home. And it was only a month later after working together that she met someone and fell in love. And now it's been at least 5 years, but they're happily married. And so it all kind of started from making this external shift of, I want to change this external part of my life to invite love in and relationships. And she now feels comfortable having people over and hosting parties. So it's really had this huge ripple effect. And then one other quick example is, I had a woman who was a shopaholic. She just bought and bought and bought, and her home was like filled with, you know, every type of, you know, shoe and houseware and designer handbag. And she almost like couldn't even, her spaces didn't even feel functional because there was so much in it. And when we really talked and got to the bottom of why are you buying so much, it was because she felt kind of empty and lost in her life. And so I had her do an experiment where she just paused. I call it a purchase pause. And she stopped buying for a month. She wouldn't buy anything. And during that time, I wanted her to replace the shopping habit with seeing what did she want to do? What did she want to enjoy in her life? And she kind of had an epiphany that she wanted to go back to school and become a lawyer. And so from shopping and shopping and shopping, because she just felt, I don't know what the purpose is in my life. I don't have a career. She then was able to discover her true purpose and passion and go back to school and become an attorney. And now she has no need to constantly be shopping because she's fed inside. She feels good about what she's doing in the world.
Wow, that's amazing. What a epiphany she had.
Thank you for listening to the Ikivi podcast. If you are enjoying listening to our podcast, do consider supporting us by visiting www.ikivi.com. That is IKKIVI.com. We are a small sustainable business supporting contemporary Indian brands. Our platform is run by an all-women team handpicking the most beautiful, ethically made clothes and accessories from across the country, all in one place. Our podcast is self-funded and will always be free to listen to. You supporting our work would mean a lot to us. Thank you for being here, and let's get back to our episode.
One thing that I practice a lot in my work is just challenging people. If you stop buying things as a way of distracting yourself, what do you uncover? And it's even, you know, for me, I've noticed like often when I want to shop like online shopping at night, it's because I'm feeling sad or lonely or restless. And so by paying attention to that, I then can say, oh, I'm feeling lonely. Maybe I'll talk to my husband or call a friend or connect with somebody instead of just buying a handbag that's going to feel exciting for 2 seconds and then it's going to dissipate and I'm going to be back where I started, but maybe even feeling worse.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've acknowledged now that we have this problem of kind of consuming or inviting a lot of clutter in our lives. If we were to acknowledge that and begin as a person that's never done this before, we kind of have basic organization skills, but not enough to help us through the day, for example. Where do we begin? And what is an area that we can start with?
Yeah. So in my first book, Minimalista, I share that the antidote to overwhelm is starting super, super small and micro. And what I see a lot is people saying, okay, I want to get organized. And then they just start tearing through their whole home and life and they get more overwhelmed. And so I like to start people with the tiniest project imaginable. So usually here in the United States, most people have a junk drawer. I don't know if thing.
I was just
common.
Thinking about
that. Yeah. Okay.
I have this one drawer that's been like meets my head for the last like month, for many months now.
Ah, perfect. Okay. So the assignment is, instead of even trying to tackle a whole room in your home, one drawer. So what I want people to do is just take everything out of the drawer. So you can use, you know, a spare counter or a tabletop and just dump everything out of the drawer, wipe down and clean the drawer so it's truly a fresh start. And then to just practice the skill of organizing by going through and physically touching each thing in the drawer and just making decisions. So much of organization is really just about making clear decisions. And so when I'm organizing, I'm just thinking, do I need this? If not, it goes in the trash or the recycling, or you can donate. If I do need it, I am grouping similar things together. So in the case of a junk drawer, what I see a lot here is there's just all of these random household items that have migrated in, and it's just a big jumble of a mess. But if you think, okay, what should go in this drawer? Like here, many people in the kitchen have a drawer that has tools and batteries and something to write on, pens, scissors, like all of the household basics. And what ends up happening in that drawer is people just throw in every imaginable thing. So step one is take it all out, sort through it, get rid of anything that doesn't make sense, and then very intentionally put back and just group like with like. So this is the whole skill of organization, is basically making decisions about, do I want to keep it? Does it make sense here? And then grouping like with like. So all of the pens together, all of the tools together, et cetera. So then when you look at your drawer, you can see at a glance what everything is, where it goes. For bonus points, I would say use some form of drawer divider or organizer so that you have a clear physical boundary in your space. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about tackling a junk drawer is once you've done that, you've really mastered the skill of organization. It doesn't get more complicated than that. And so you can use that as a victory and then continue when you have time with another drawer or a shelf or a small closet and keep going as time allows with one tiny project at a time. So that's really the key, is don't try to rip off the Band-Aid and do everything all at once, because you'll just get completely overwhelmed. And instead, to really focus on those tiny little victories, and then pat yourself on the back and then do another one when time allows.
Yeah, I think that's the exact thought I had, was, oh my God, where do we even begin? Because there's so many aspects of your environment that require this, as well as in our lives. Like, for example, just kind of figuring out a way to prioritize your day or your week or your month. Like, where do you even begin? Because there's so much going on in our lives that we just don't know what. If we just kind of go with the flow and just kind of, you know, go with the day, it's so difficult because you're jumping from one task to the other task, or, you know, doing so many random things. What are your thoughts on the way we live our lives day to day?
Absolutely. So I use the same process for both home and life. And my first step in the process is clarify. So it's stepping back and deciding those big questions. What do I want my life to look like? What is the most important thing to me? What are my top one or two goals right now for this season in my life, which will change all the time, but I like to think of things as seasons. So looking at maybe a 3-month period and just thinking, during this 3-month period, what do I most want to accomplish? What's the most important priority and value for me right now? And that decision will anchor everything ahead. So an example, like when I was a new mom and I had a baby and a toddler, my focus couldn't be my career because it was impossible. I was juggling a screaming baby and a toddler who wanted to like crawl up the bookshelf. And so for that season, I was able to clarify, my big goal right now is being the best mom that I can and feeding my children and keeping them in clean clothes and diapers and having fun with them and being present. But now, for example, I'm writing a third book. And so the season of my life is very much focused around finishing a manuscript, which is a huge project that requires tremendous focus. So once you decide the big picture, what's the big goal for this season? Then you can start backing into looking at what do I need to plan for the month ahead, for the week ahead, for the day ahead, to make sure that I'm staying on track with those goals. Mm-hmm. So in terms of planning your life, I like to think about it so the brain doesn't get too overwhelmed with like a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. It's much easier to focus on what's right ahead of me for the next chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And what are the concrete results that I want? So I like to think about goals instead of having a big broad goal, like I want to be a better mother is very hard to plan, or, you know, I want to do creative work is also very hard to plan. But if your goal is, I want to spend quality time with my husband one time a week for an hour, now you can plan that and make it happen and put it in your schedule. Or if it's, I want to complete a book in a year, then I need to have a chapter completed every week, say, mm-hmm. edited. And now I can look at my week and break down all of these little micro chunks of time and say, maybe it's, I need to write a page every day. And now it's less overwhelming, but you know that if you write a page every day for a year, you'll have a book at the end of that year. Mm-hmm. So it's looking at what's the big goal and now how do I break that down into really tiny bite-sized chunks? And the other thing I should mention is we put so much pressure on ourselves, especially as women, to do everything perfectly all at once. And I think the big lesson I want to drive home is it's impossible. Nobody can do it. Even though we're fed this myth that we should be able to do it, it's impossible. And so instead of looking at how can I do everything perfectly all at once, it's looking at what are the one or two most important things right now that I want to lean into and what can I let go of for this season of my life, if not forever? What's not important? What's not adding value or contributing? And I think it's very difficult for women to say no because we're trained to people please and to serve and to be yes sayers. But I think part of my success in terms of being able to churn out books and programs and help so many people is all the things I say no to. And so I want to give people that invitation that by saying yes to one big important thing, you have to say no to a lot of other things that are less important. And that's one of the most valuable lessons I think I've learned in my life and career, probably.
That's very interesting that you say that because I just had this conversation recently with somebody from my team, and we were talking about how she didn't want to have children because she's like there's too much to it. And that's exactly what I've been thinking and feeling is that I have this child, but I also have this life, and I also have this business to run. How do I do it all? It's literally when I just had my daughter, I was like, I can't do this. I can't have a full-time job and, you know, try to run a successful business, but at the same time, take care of this child. Like, how do you choose, pick and choose? We want to have it all as women nowadays. Yeah. It's such a difficult...
Of course.
And you can't pick either or, right? You have to have that balance. And that's such a challenge to kind of come to terms with because you feel guilty about either or when you're doing either or.
Yes. Yes. It's very, very difficult to choose because I think by nature, we never want to say no to anything or do a subpar job at anything. We want to do everything well. I think if you look at, if you try to be a perfect mother, a perfect career woman, a perfect spouse, a perfect friend, it is quite literally impossible. You will end up doing a poor job at all of the things and all of them will suffer. And so what's helped me is thinking, I really only have the capacity as a human being to do an exemplary job at one or maybe two things at the same time. And so by accepting our human limitations, we can gain a sense of peace and found saying, this isn't forever, but it's for right now. Mm-hmm. So I am a less engaged mother when I'm writing a book, but I also feel like I'm teaching my girls how to be a leader, how to lean into their jobs and careers, how to be an example of what's possible. And so I talk to them very openly about this season, I'm going to be a little more distracted and a little less available because I'm writing this book and here's why I'm writing it and here's why I'm doing it. And so I use it as kind of a teachable moment for them. And of course, I don't neglect my children when I'm writing a book, but I'm not the perfect mother and I can't do everything. And sometimes I'll order takeout for dinner or leave the dishes in the sink for a night because the priority is getting a chapter done in my book, and that's okay. So it's starting to make peace with good enough in some areas of your life to have one or two things really thriving. Likewise, when my kids were really young, I felt like they really needed me. And it made sense to me to have my career go on the back burner. And during the first few years of their lives, when I was, you know, spending the majority of my time and energy and focus with them, I saw clients only on weekends and only for 3 to 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Through Friday, sometimes evenings, because they're older and they're independent now. And so I think it's looking at these thoughtful trade-offs and liking your reasons for saying yes to something. So making sure that the thing that you're really leaning into for this season in your life is worth it to you to then do a less good job in some other areas while never fully neglecting things like your health or your family or the things that are the most important.
Yeah, I like the idea of figuring out what's the most important thing in your life as per the season that you're in. I like that. It kind of gives you some focus and acceptance to the way the person that you are at that time in your life. That's really nice.
Yeah, and what can also be helpful is establishing I call it a minimum baseline. So what are the things that no matter what, I want to make sure to do and honor in my life, even if I have one big goal I'm putting mm-hmm. most of my energy into? So an example for me would be, I always want to take care of my health. So no matter what's going on, I'm going to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm never going to skip a meal. And I'm going to take a walk every single day. So those things, no matter what I'm doing, whether I have a newborn baby or I'm writing a book or I'm traveling, I'm always going to do those things. And also in my home, even though I'm a very busy career woman, every night during the week, I have dinner with my children and my husband. So even during those very peak busy times, if I'm in a book launch or launching a new program, I still know that every day at the same time, we're all going to sit down together and check in and hear about each other's day. So that's another way of kind of feeling like you're not spread too thin, but you can define for yourself, what are those things that you always want to make sure are baked into the fabric of your life? Mm-hmm. And then saying, I'm going to only take on one big kind of stretch goal at a time.
Yeah. And also I feel like then those daily things that you're doing doesn't feel like, you know, it's one more thing that you're doing. Like, for example, exercising every day. If it's just part of your life, then you don't feel like, oh my God, I have to do this as well. It's just part of who you are. And you're not kind of achieving exactly the act of exercising or meditating or whatever it is. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, beautifully said.
So you do talk about, we didn't really get into this, but social media, we kind of touched upon it a little earlier, mm-hmm. is, I still think, one of the biggest influencers in our lives today in terms of both positively and negatively. What are your thoughts on the social media in general, and how can we use it more as a tool as opposed to, I mean, I know, you know, we turn it off, use it a certain amount of time in the day, but what are your thoughts on the social media structure of our lives today?
Yeah, it's so tricky. And it's something I honestly struggle with myself, because I feel like social media is a tool and it's a very useful tool, but it's also it's designed intentionally to be addictive and to claim more and more and more of our attention. And so I find, you know, I use social media for business and it's been very useful for me, but I also have found social media to be hugely distracting and a big time suck and something where I can lose hours of my day and say, what did I just do? Why did I spend my time this way? So I think, again, it's about intentionality and deciding ahead of time, really mindfully, whether it's for your personal life or for your career, what am I using social media for? So am I using it to connect with friends? And if so, how often do I want to do that? And what's the result that I'm specifically wanting? Or is it to leverage social media for my business, building my brand, connecting with authors or podcasters? And if so, how often do I want to use it? How do I want to set up my life so that I can limit the social media usage in my day-to-day? And I think because it is designed to suck you in and claim more and more and more of your attention, what I've found is before I open up my app, I have to say to myself, what am I doing? What is my purpose right now? So that I don't just start scrolling mindlessly. And so what's been really useful for me, because I primarily use social media and Instagram specifically for business, is I think, okay, my intention is to share value with my community. So I'm going to go on and I'm going to post and I'm going to leave.
Yeah.
And then I have specific times where I go on and try to, you know, connect with people or answer, respond to people. I also have found that what's really helpful for me is the time of day that I'm spending on social media that's not the morning. So most people tend to be the most fresh and productive and clear-eyed and focused in the morning. So if you get on social media first thing, you're spending your most precious, useful brain energy on this tool that can end up being very distracting and not productive. So what I try to do is use the first hours of my day for anything that requires bigger brain energy, like going on an interview or writing a book or producing content. And then at the end of the day, when I'm less focused and more tired, that's going to be my social media time. So I'm using my less valuable time for social media. I have also found it very helpful to practice constraint with social media. So I am no longer on Facebook or Twitter. I deleted my accounts. And so I'm only on one form of social media. So that's been really useful for me, because then there's one place people can find me. It's very easy. If you want to find me, I'm on Instagram and that's it. And instead of trying to balance Twitter and Facebook and, you know, all of these different formats, TikTok, I go all in on one. So I've been very successful with this one platform, but I'm not distracted trying to juggle every type of social media there is.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. The question I have next, and this is my last question before we get into your new book, is about the fear of missing out. I feel like even with social media platforms and choosing to be on just one platform, like the first thing that comes to my head is, am I missing out on something being on another platform? Or for my business, is there something that I'm missing out on another platform? Or what if something happens to Instagram? And this is not just with social media. This is with anything in our lives, right? And we constantly are saying yes to everything because of the fear of missing out. What are your thoughts on that? And how is that? how do we deal with something like that? That is kind of almost ingrained in the way we are living our lives nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a very natural mindset and it's rooted in scarcity, right? It's rooted in there's not enough for me. I can't suck it all up and do all of the things. I think what is really useful is accepting you will always be missing out. It is absolutely impossible to be everywhere at once, doing everything at once. You can't be in New York and California at the same time. You can't write a book and produce a podcast at the same time. Life is always about decisions. And so I think instead of kind of leaning in and accepting this myth that we might be able to somehow do it all, I think there's real peace and freedom in accepting there's no way we will ever get to do it all. And there's a wonderful freedom that comes in accepting that we can only do a few things, but we get to choose. We're in the driver's seat of our life. So nobody else gets to choose that for us. Like I got to decide, I'm going to delete Facebook. That felt very liberating to me. For someone else, they might love Facebook, but they don't get any value out of Instagram. So I think life is about thoughtful choices and making decisions feels very liberating and satisfying for the brain. What feels very taxing and emotionally exhausting for the brain is the thought, I want to do everything, I might be missing out. So I think while it's a very natural thought, and I have that thought too, I think what can really help is saying to your brain, there's no way we can do it all, but we do get to pick and decide. And how freeing and how liberating that we get to decide what's important, what matters the most, where we want to put our precious time and energy while we're here alive on earth. Yeah. And I think it feels very liberating to start getting comfortable with saying no. And I think it's something that's taken me a lot of practice. But now that I've started saying no to things and sharing that with people, I see people saying, oh, I can do that. I can have permission to delete Facebook or not go on social media at all, or, you know, not cook dinner if I don't feel like it. Like we have the freedom to make those choices, which I think is really a joyful, liberating thing.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, oh, I can actually do that. And that itself is something that is liberating. And the fact that you don't really think about these day-to-day things that you're just doing. And you're like, wait a minute, why am I doing that again? Why is it something that's taking up, you know, 1 hour of my time?
Exactly. It's slowing down to question, what is the value and does this get me closer to the life that I want or not? Is this serving the big goal and the primary purpose or not? Mm-hmm. And not everything can. It's just not possible.
Yeah. Okay. So we're so excited about your book. Can you please tell us about it a little bit? And where can someone follow you, find the book, all of that?
Yes. So I'll share because I'm about to have two books out. So my first book is called Minimalista.
Yeah.
And it breaks down my whole process and toolkit of how to edit and organize and style your home to support the life that you want. My new book, which I think is the one you're mentioning, is called Organized Living. And this book takes you around the world into the homes of 25 of the top organizing experts in the world. So I traveled from Mexico City through Canada, across the United States, throughout Europe. Unfortunately, I didn't get to India because it was during the heart of COVID when I was traveling. So traveling in general was difficult, but I did personally visit 25 different organizers with a photographer. And we interviewed and toured the homes of each organizer. So you'll be treated to 25 drastically different types of homes and styles and people who are minimalists and maximalists and in tiny homes and in huge homes. And it's chock full of lots of tips and inspiration for your own home. So you can order both of these books, Minimalista and Organized Living, anywhere books are sold. They should be available online all over the world. You can also visit my website, which is just my name, shiragill.com, and visit me on Instagram, as I mentioned, at shiragill. And I also have a new community and newsletter, which is totally free on Substack. So I can send you the link and hopefully you can include all of those links for people. I love connecting with people all around the world.
Yes, I'd love that. Definitely share the links with us and we'll add it in the show notes. The book sounds so exciting to get into the lives of 25 different people. That's something that, you know, that you don't really get much of. Is there one takeaway from the book that you think really stands out from having gone through this whole process of meeting and visiting the homes of these 25 different people?
Yes. Well, so all 25 of them are professional organizers. And I think one of the things that I noticed is that for all of them, organization was much more than pretty bins and baskets and, you know, like editorial style photos. It was really about creating space for what they want. So It was about creating a sense of self-care in their homes and peace and beauty in their homes and their lives. And I think often people think of organization as a tool that's just like, oh, I'm going to organize my drawer. I'm going to organize my closet. But I think my biggest takeaway was that organization can really be used as a tool to improve every part of your life, to lead to more freedom and more joy and more connection, more productivity and ease. And so I think that was the biggest takeaway, is just that it's something that everybody can access. Everyone can apply to be a bit more mindful about the things that they own and how they set them up to really optimize their lives.
Yeah. This is such an exciting way for me to start my day. Thank you so much, Shiragill, for having this conversation with me. Thank you so much for sharing your valuable insights.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure and a joy to be here. So thank you.
If you enjoyed this conversation, don't forget to subscribe to the Ikibi podcast, a space for discussion on living meaningful and fuller lives each day. The Ikibi podcast is a property edited and produced by the team at Ikibi.